It's time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Yes, it does on a Wednesday, and great to have you with us. Thank you, Chad Erickson. Lots to do over the next 60 minutes. Cornucopia of topics today on the show. We are guest-free today, which means it's just me and this guy. Me and this guy. Sam Yarnell is here. I got a lot of stuff that we're going to go through over the next 60 minutes today. I talked about the NFL yesterday with Matt Verderam and sort of got his take on what his favorite storylines were. But we haven't talked about what our favorite storylines are. And I want to get into some of that to start the show today. Particularly, you know, and one that Matt brought up, and I have a feeling it's one you're going to bring up as well, and that's the Jets. I mean, you know, so I'm just going to put it on a tee for you, say New York Jets training camp, start of the season right around the corner, go.
Oh my goodness, Jason. Great to be with you as always, and great to be talking about an NFL season that seems to have one of the same storylines that you and I talked about going into last season. That's when true. I said Robert Saleh should be looked at as one of these coaches that is totally on the hot seat, and then the Aaron Rodgers injury bailed him out. Such is not happening this year, and it's kind of been put on a national stage, the lack of grip over the locker room that he has and that coaching staff and that front office has, and maybe it's because Woody Johnson just doesn't care anymore. I don't know. The whole thing is a mess. You've got Hassan Reddick holding out because he doesn't have his new contract, although when he was traded to the Jets just a couple of months ago, he said he would play through the season and then negotiate the new contract after. So that's a whole mess. They've somehow managed to really upset a very, very good defensive player who would theoretically provide a massive boost to that defense. You've got Aaron Rodgers going on the most popular podcast in the world while he's playing in the American Century Championship, talking about how it's okay for him to miss these off-season workouts and off-season practices for his team. Like, he didn't just miss the whole season last year and then take a roster spot from someone for the last 4 weeks of the season because he didn't have the wherewithal to realize that he was, you know, taking someone else's job at that point. And his team was not in a playoff spot because they're the Jets. Robert Saleh has to go. There has to be changes from the top down in this organization. They are an absolute mess, Jason. I will look to fade them week to week and in the season-long futures markets. This team is a disaster.
Calm down. It's just training camp. Why do you call him Saleh, by the way, when it's Saleh? Do you just love to try? Do you just love to needle? Is that what it is?
No, I hear that very frequently in the media when people are reporting on him. I hear that that's how he's referred to. So I don't know.
Look, with a lot of these stories, we have to take with a lot of these training camp stories that we're talking about. You have to take it a lot of it with a grain of salt because nobody's played a single down. We haven't even seen a preseason snap in a game yet. Not that those are all that valuable to begin with, but we have to calm down a little bit when it comes to the Jets. The Reddick thing is very compelling because a lot of times it's teams that will go back on their word towards a player and a player winds up on the wrong end of it and getting screwed. So my sympathy for the Jets when it comes to how Reddick and his agent are handling this situation, not that big. Here's the other thing I'm going to say. I can't believe you're putting me in the position to defend Aaron Rodgers, but you're putting me in a position to defend Aaron Rodgers. The guy took part in the voluntary OTAs. He clearly had a thing he wanted to do. I think he went to like Egypt or something like that. Mm-hmm. He wanted to go travel overseas. He's Aaron Rodgers. He has played so much in this league. And I get he missed a lot of last season. And I get that he takes up a roster spot. And I'll also get that self-awareness and Aaron Rodgers are not two things you generally put side by side. I accept all of those things. But as it relates to how it's all going to kind of work out in the wash here, as we get into training camp and as we get into the preseason, I'm gonna take a wait and see approach. You know, we had Matt Verderam on the show yesterday, and off air, I asked him at the end of the interview what he thought about the Buffalo Bills, and he said the one word he would use is promising. And then off the air, he expanded on that and said, I think they're going to win the division. I'm not so sure of that. I still want to see what this Jets team looks like for a lengthy period of time with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback before I'm ready to coronate or anoint the Bills as the team to beat in the AFC East. There's still a lot that has to happen. I'm just going to – let's just calm down. Let's bring down the temperature a little bit when it comes to the Jets. Let's just quick calm down.
On the Aaron Rodgers thing, and then we'll get to the Steelers because they've got a very interesting situation as well. But on the Aaron Rodgers thing, going to Egypt, dude, the Jets didn't make the playoffs. Your season ended in early December. Last time I checked, there's pretty good weather in Egypt all year round. Why didn't you go in the other 4 months? Why did you need to schedule your vacation during a time when your team was working out when you haven't played in a game for them in 10 months?
Maybe it was a better rate. I don't know what to tell you. I do want to talk about this deal. You know, maybe he was going on Kayak trying to find the best rate, and it just happened to be when he was going. Hi, Kayak. I use you all the time. Steelers, let's talk about them real quick here. I think they are one of the more compelling watches because of Russell Wilson, obviously Justin Fields. Wilson, you know, in danger of really just completely shattering his legacy and what we've thought of him throughout his entire career. What happened in Denver was an absolute disaster. That's as much on the Broncos as it is on Russell Wilson. I will say that. Two coaches in 2 years, obviously a lot of baggage there. It wasn't going to work out. This is his opportunity, and it also kind of coincides with Mike Tomlin, who is a future Hall of Fame head coach, who's, you know, getting opportunity after opportunity with sort of mediocre teams and mediocre rosters. Now he gets a guy who's, you know, probably a future Hall of Famer in Russell Wilson. He has Justin Fields playing behind him. I think that is going to be one of the more compelling watches, not just of the regular season, but starting now with training camp, with the preseason, because you're going to have Fields and Wilson playing in the preseason. Which one outduels the other? Who's the starting quarterback come week one in Pittsburgh? I think it's going to be a fantastic watch.
You can get Justin Fields at plus 400 to be the Steelers week one starter, and I like that bet.
I do too. Stick around. We're coming back. We got more sports wrap for you. Paul Skeens doing Paul Skeens things, even in a loss. We'll talk about it next.
When you're a parent, you're always driving everywhere, all the time, to practice, to games, to practice. I say that twice because I definitely did that twice today. And then the other half of your job is to wait. It's when I had the time to call Car Shield. I'm putting on so many miles driving the kids around. It's not a matter of if, but when my car will break down. And when it does, I can't afford the money or the time it normally takes to get my car fixed. The plan I got through CarShield helps pay for expensive repairs on up to 6,000 parts of my car, including vital parts and systems like my engine, transmission, electronics, AC, or, in the dead of winter, my heater. That saves me a ton of money for things like sports equipment, lessons, and gas. Did I mention driving to practice? Bottom line, calling CarShield is a must in my house. The price I locked in with CarShield is the price I'll pay for as long as I cover my car, which says a lot in this world where everything seems to be going up in price.
If you're driving an out-of-warranty car, it's not a matter of if it'll break down, it's when. So you need to call CarShield before it does. Nobody should have to decide whether they should put food on the table or pay for a car repair. It's nice to find a company like CarShield that actually cares about their customers.
And every plan through CarShield includes 24/7 roadside assistance, courtesy towing, battery help, and more. They say practice makes perfect, and with CarShield on my side, I've got one less thing to worry about when it comes to paying for out-of-warranty car repairs. Call CarShield before your car breaks down so you don't miss a single game. Your kids will thank you.
It's not a matter of if your car will break down, but when. But you need to call CarShield before your car breaks down. CarShield gives you a price lock guarantee, which means your monthly price never goes up for as long as you cover your car. Get help paying for expensive repair bills by calling CarShield now. Call 800-689-5350. 800-689-5350. 800-689-5350.
Attention families with a loved one in a nursing home. If your loved one has suffered from bed sores, falls, broken bones, dehydration, or even death, you may be entitled to a substantial settlement. If you have a loved one who was injured in a nursing home, we will find out what happened. State violations are found against nursing homes every day. You have a limited time to file your claim, so don't wait. Call 800-398-5999 and speak with one of our attorneys. The call is confidential and free.
We keep things moving on this Wednesday edition of Sports Wrap. We'll get some more NFL in about 10 minutes. Very interesting revelation from Kyle Shanahan as it relates to something that happened in this offseason. And it's pretty revealing as it relates to Bill Belichick's mindset. We'll get to it coming up. Sammy Arnell rejoins me. Oh, anytime we talk about Paul Skeens, there's always a smile on this guy's face because he just loves talking about him and David Ardsma, who comes on the show, former MLB reliever. They love talking them some Paul Skeens. So here we
two
are.
Two guys who know ball.
Yeah, there you go. That's what you have in common. That's it. Paul Skeens suffers his first loss as a major league pitcher, but he does it in the process of pitching nearly a complete game, something that's rare these days in baseball for anybody, in a loss against the Cardinals. And by the way, if you ever want Paul Skeens to lose, all you have to do is have me bet on him. Yesterday on the show, I said I loved the bet on Paul Skeens for five no-hit innings at plus 2,100. Of course, that didn't hit. And then, of course, the Cardinals did hit just enough to beat Skeens, and the surging Pirates 2-1 was the final. By the way, did you see the crowd? Did you see the attendance for that game? Pirate fans, they love getting them some Paul Skeens, too. I think they had like 35,000 at PNC Park. It's basically a sellout. Which doesn't happen for the Pirates, let alone on a Tuesday in the month of July. So good things happening for the Pirates right now. I don't know if they can keep it together long enough and actually make the postseason as a wild card team. But Skeens continues to be the story. He was fantastic. 8 strikeouts, gave up just a couple of runs, no walks. His stock keeps rising in the Cy Young Award race. He is not the top pick, though. We do need to make sure we're clear on this. He is not the top pick. Chris Sale is right now at plus 145. Then Zach Wheeler at plus 180. And then it's Paul Skeens at plus 350. And then it drops off of a cliff. All right, Sam. He was, what, 5-1 yesterday? Now he's 3.5-1? Go ahead.
Well, so a couple of things. I think the reflection of the price in the book speaks to something that to me has been the most controversial part of Paul Skeens in this award, whether or not he will qualify as a pitcher, essentially, whether or not he'll pitch enough innings to be listed on the qualified starters list, at which he would lead the major leagues in ERA right now by about 0.2 of a run, maybe 0.3. His ERA is 1.93, and Reynaldo Lopez is next closest. I believe his is around a 2.2. So do the math there. But yesterday proved so much to me, Jason, that the Pirates have no intention of slowing Paul Skeens down.
That's exactly what I was going to say. That is exactly what I was going to say. 103
pitches.
Yes.
He pitched 8 1/3 innings, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So into the 9th inning, it's his, just checking my numbers here, it's his 3rd outing all season going over 100 pitches, Jason. And he's only had one outing this season where he's thrown less than 90 pitches. That was his debut, and he threw 84. The Pirates have shown us, down the stretch, that they're not going to shut this guy down. They're going to let him ease it out as much as he wants.
Yes, and I will tell you why I 100% agree with this. I will give you a comparison. Yes, I'm about to bring up the Yankees. Luis Gil. The Yankees, what they've done, they're doing the exact opposite with Luis Gil to try and get him as deep into the season as they can. They're trying to lower his pitch count, keep him in less high leverage situations, pull him from games earlier because they're worried about, you know, whether or not he's going to be able to make it that far. The Pirates are just blowing through the wall. They're just driving right through it. Yankees are kind of tiptoeing up to it with Heel, who they have a similar situation with in terms of trying to figure out, you know, how deep he can go. The Pirates are just driving right through the wall. They don't care. Not that they don't care, but they're taking the approach of sort of ripping the Band-Aid off and running right through the wall with Skeens. So when you said that, it immediately resonated with me because when I see them going out there, they're not worried about, hey, you know, because if you're worried about him not being able to make it longer into the season, you'd make the outing shorter, get more outings, but shorter outings. And when you have him go the distance against the Cardinals, which, by the way, almost feels like a double loss because you did push him that far and you didn't wind up getting the win, but that's another topic. Boy, he is something, though. I watched a lot. That was the most of one of his starts I watched yesterday, obviously, because I had a vested interest. But, I mean, the guy is just marvelous. He is just marvelous to watch.
So, a comparison that we've heard since he was called up is mm-hmm. Steven Strasburg. And obviously, me being as close as I am to the Washington Nationals, I found it very interesting, the continual comparisons we draw. Because to me, beyond the day of their debut, they're not comparable.
I agree.
Right?
Again, I agree with you.
The Washington Nationals in 2010, people forget this. Steven Strasburg debuted in 2010. Mm-hmm. The Washington Nationals were then managed by Jim Riggleman, and they finished the season 63-99, I believe. They were never in contention. They had Ivan Rodriguez was the main catcher for that team in the late stages of his career. They were never a contender. Yeah. The Pittsburgh Pirates could actually make the playoffs this year. So they have every reason to let their star pitcher go out there and give it everything they have because wins are a lot more valuable to them than they were to the Nationals in 2010.
Yep. I agree. And look, I was looking at something interesting from our friend Andrew Petcash at Profluence, who I had on the show a few weeks back. Major League Baseball, about 20% of team revenues are tied to attendance. Think about that for a second. 20% of revenues for Major League Baseball teams are tied to attendance. The Pirates never draw anything in one of the most beautiful ballparks by all accounts. In all of Major League Baseball, ranks highest in a lot of different areas. They need to start drawing fans. And Paul Skeens helps do that. He helps put fans in the seats. You know what else helps to put fans in the seats? Winning baseball games. And right now, they're doing a lot of that at a time of the year where they're not typically doing a lot of that. I think the Pirates are all in. It'll also be interesting to see what they do at the trade deadline because their closer situation is still not very good. We're coming back. Kyle Shanahan with some interesting comments on Bill Belichick. You're going to want to hear about this. It's next on Sports Wrap. All right, let's take it to segment three on this Wednesday. Just me and Sam today. Just like the early days. All right, Sam, the Bill Belichick story sort of continues to evolve. And look, I don't want to say it comes down to ego. I don't want to say it comes down to, you know, self-worth and trying to figure out what he's still worth in the NFL sort of landscape and scheme of things. But Kyle Shanahan made some interesting news on the TK Show podcast, which is The Athletic's Tim Kawakami. Shanahan was on with Kawakami and explained that he actually approached Bill Belichick during this offseason and said, hey, how would you like to come on and join our staff? And Bill Belichick politely declined, according to Tim Kawakami, which reminds me of my favorite story of when I went to go once interview Bill Belichick on a driving range at TPC River Highlands at the Travelers Championship, and I walked up to him, walked side by side, and said, Bill, Jason Page, I'm with ESPN Radio in Hartford, we're, you know, we talk about the Page all the time, can I get you on the show? And he just looked at me and went, no. I suspect he might have given the same kind of answer to Kyle Shanahan as it relates to taking a position with the 49ers. It tells me a couple of things. One, credit to Kyle Shanahan. It takes a lot of brass to be able to walk up or call or get in touch with Bill Belichick. And it takes a lot of self-confidence in your own position within the organization. And you're standing in the game and you're standing with the organization. To be able to say, I'm going to bring in a future Hall of Fame head coach to work alongside me, maybe as an assistant head coach, you know, one of those roles, that sort of thing. It takes a lot of self-confidence to be able to do that. So one, kudos to Kyle Shanahan, who I'm neither a fan of nor a hater of. Two, it tells us Bill Belichick's holding out to be a head coach and only a head coach. And that's the only thing he's going to be accepting of, which does make you start to wonder, is he going to get another opportunity if his mindset is it's head coach or bust, because you're limiting the number of opportunities that actually exist? One, how many head coaching opportunities open up every year? Two, how many of those opportunities are going to want a septuagenarian as their head coach? There you go.
So I think it's quite the development in the Bill Belichick saga. You wonder if Kyle Shanahan reached out to him to become something like you said, Jason, an assistant head coach, or maybe even something lighter. Maybe he was trying to be the special teams coordinator. We know Bill Belichick has a long history in special teams. And that's I don't want to say that's a low profile role, right? But it is a role where you will seldom have the spotlight shown directly on yourself. That feels like what Bill Belichick kind of needed. But when you think about the kind of off-the-field narratives that have developed around him since the Patriots season ended and since he was relieved of his duties, I just feel like he needs a year away from football. It feels like Bill Belichick needs to like move to Annapolis and coach the Naval Academy's lacrosse team for a couple of years.
He doesn't have a couple of years. He's not a kid. Hey, Google, how old is Bill Belichick?
Oh my gosh. I don't think that Bill Belichick is past the point where he completely will rule out a
72.
Return.
72. He has not a couple of years.
I don't think that a return to the NFL in general is really likely for him at this point. It seems like it's kind of a sour ending to one of the greatest of all time.
Dallas. I'm telling you, man. Dallas. I could see it.
Wow. We're talking about an old head coach, and then him and Jerry Jones. There's going to be a lot of nursing home jokes coming out of Central Texas.
I get it, but I'm just saying. But kudos to Kyle Shanahan, man, for being able to just kind of stand up and be like, yeah, all right. You know what? You want to come and join our staff in whatever capacity it is, because you know there's going to be questions, and you know the media is going to speculate every single day, or every time you lose a game, or every time you make a wrong decision that potentially costs you a game. You're going to have to hear the questions, whether asked to you or asked around you, of whether or not Bill Belichick's going to be the next head coach of the 49ers. And Kyle Shanahan was like, I don't care if it means our team gets better by, you know, adding Bill Belichick, and by osmosis, we become a better team. I don't have a problem with it. I know you didn't think osmosis was going to make an appearance in the show today.
No, it is kind of poetic when you think about it, right? Like, Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator against Bill Belichick as the head coach when the Patriots came back against the 28-3 deficit, right? And now Kyle Shanahan wants to go win a Super Bowl. And the missing piece on the coaching staff was Bill Belichick. the optics aren't great. The optics are not great.
So if you're setting the line, no line should be. If you're setting the line on Bill Belichick ever being a head coach in the NFL again, what would you set the line at?
Ever
being a head coach in the NFL again. Ever isn't a long time. You make it sound like he's 45. He's 72.
Ever's a lot of coaching cycles, Jason.
Aren't a lot of cycles left.
And he could be brought in as an interim guy.
A lot of rings on the trunk of that tree.
Ever is not a high number. Like, ever, I'd go like max, like plus 115.
Really?
Yeah. For him to ever coach again, that's what I would set the line at. Plus 115. That feels right. All we've been hearing is stories from different organizations like about like how 200. He was in contention.
I feel like it's at least 200. When you have what happened with the Falcons occur, you know that Bob Kraft is trashing them behind the scenes every chance he gets. Number of teams that are going to want somebody that old, you have to be a contender because you're not bringing him in to just, you know, unless you're bringing him in to just break the record as your head coach, you know, Don Shula's record. I don't see it. I think the opportunities are so limited. I don't think it winds up happening. If you ask me to bet one or the other, I'm betting the no. I don't think Bill Belichick winds up coaching. I think he's going to come up just short of Don Shula's number.
I agree. But you've got to think about the chronology of it all. And I think people have come around on the fact that Robert Kraft had it out for Bill Belichick at the end.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right, stick around. We're coming back. Why athletes' actions matter. I'll explain. Coming up. All right, we're halfway home on this Wednesday edition of Sports Wrap, coming up in 10 minutes. Something to consider. An Olympic basketball edition. You'll have to stick around to find out about that. But Sam Yarnell, I want to talk about... I know. There's going to be... I should have done a disclaimer before the start of this segment. There will be pearl clutching here, okay? We're gonna clutch those pearls real tight. There's going to be some moralizing here. You've been warned. There's also going to be a video that is kind of graphic. It might be disturbing for some people to watch, so I am giving you that disclaimer so that if you want to turn away from the screen, I am giving you the opportunity. Here we go in 3, 2, 1. Okay. What took place recently at a basketball game involving teenagers at the College of Alameda in the Bay Area got me thinking. So if you're looking on the screen, you'll see the video of a scrum, basketball players, you know, tugging for a loose ball, and a third player jumping into this mix with two players kind of involved on the floor, and literally using his sneaker and stomping down on the head of another player that was on the floor. You could see the damage to the kid's head. He was concussed. You could see he was clearly hurt by the play. The player who stomped on the player's head was taken off the court, taken off the floor, and, you know, the police are investigating. That's the general gist of it. Basketball game, organized game, player stomps on another player's head, he gets taken out of the game, the player whose head was stomped on is concussed. There, you have all the details. And because of where it took place in the Bay Area, it kind of got me thinking. Now, some people are going to say I'm stretching. Some people are going to say maybe I'm being unfair. But if there was ever a time to sort of examine the behavior of somebody like Draymond Green, and just the culture, and he's not alone. I don't want to make it sound like Draymond Green is the only player that's ever behaved poorly in the history of sports. But if you're talking about the poster boy for bad behavior, ask Jordan Poole. If you're talking about the poster boy for player behavior, for bad behavior, ask Domantas Sabonis' chest. You're talking about Draymond Green. To the point that, I mean, the league was almost looking at banning him, and he was taken off the floor for a certain length of time by the Warriors and by the league. And if there was ever a time to have a conversation about why the behavior of players matters. And I can expand this beyond physical aggression and this play against Yusuf Nurkic, where the two got tangled up and Draymond Green, you know, threw an elbow at his head. If there's ever a time where we should have this conversation, it is when you see a play like the one that took place in this basketball, this teenage youth basketball game, and ask ourselves, where are kids getting the idea that this is okay? And it comes from things like this. And again, I'm not trying to say Draymond Green is the sole reason these things are happening, but he is exhibit A in bad behavior in professional sports that makes its way through college, high school, youth sports. And we could go bat flips, Sam, and talk about that stuff and the way baseball players behave. There's a whole bunch of different ways we can go with this. But just in terms of associating the behavior of a Draymond Green and you see something like this, and you can't help but think, is there a causation here?
I think that what youth forget when they look up to a guy like Draymond Green or any of these players who engage in this kind of behavior is that there's always on court, on field, repercussions at the highest level. And obviously those can flow off the court. You know, you see that when, blanking on his name, Thomas Bryant was awarded his championship ring, but not allowed, had to come get his ring before the game because he was serving a suspension for a fight that broke out. This dynamic, right? We can continue to draw ties back to social media because, like, there were guys way worse than Draymond Green in the 90s. I'm looking at you, Dennis Rodman, who got in much worse fights, but it never infiltrated its way into the youths like it has, like we're seeing with this, because social media didn't exist. The clip wasn't end to end on the globe within 60 seconds of the event happening. When it comes to Draymond Green specifically, this is something that's been going on for 10 years, right? Like a decade, we've had to deal with Draymond Green doing this between college and the NBA. I think people, especially kids who may, especially in that part of the country, look up to Draymond Green, which, by the way, if you're a parent and your kid's looking up to Draymond Green, whew, we might need to take some parenting classes. But
shrug emoji.
I think that there are some, probably, inevitably, some kids in that part of the country specifically that look up to Draymond Green. And what you'll forget, what I'm sure those kids choose to forget, is the 2016 NBA Finals, where Draymond Green accumulated too many flagrant fouls and was suspended a game that ultimately cost his team the championship. Mm-hmm. It never works out, kids. It never works out.
Juan Soto on Monday took 38 seconds to get around the bases after one of his home runs, all because Jose Siri, just prior to that, took a long time to get around the bases. Little League World Series, guys are going to be walking around the bases. We're coming back with something to consider next. Odds and Ends wraps it up in about 10 minutes here on the program. But first, something to consider, Sam Yarnell. Something to consider, Sam Yarnell. For your consideration, I give you USA Basketball. Men's, women's. Which has more pressure to perform in these Olympic Games? The men or the women? My initial thought was, it has to be the men. Oh my God, it's the men. And then I actually started to think about it today, and I can make an argument that it's actually the women because of the spotlight that has been shown on the women's professional and collegiate basketball world. Add on to that the fact that you had the WNBA All-Stars comprised of a lot of young talent that wasn't good enough to make the women's Olympic team and Team USA basketball and Jen Rosati and the powers that be there deciding not to put Caitlin Clark, among others, on this USA women's basketball team, which then loses to those WNBA All-Stars, that there might be more pressure on the women. And certainly in terms of the odds, and as it would relate to what the odds makers think about the chances of the USA women's basketball team winning gold in Paris, I think you could make the argument there's more pressure on the women than there is the men.
Both of these teams are, and this is only as far back as I researched, but both of these teams are four-time defending gold medalists. That's insane. just needed everybody to realize that when you're looking at the minus 1800 for the women and the minus 400 for the men,
yeah,
there's value there. I mean, come on, lay it with both of them. That said, this is an interesting question and one that, Jason, I don't know that I have a solid answer to immediately and would like to walk through on the show, because when you think about the men, right, this is a dominant team redeeming themselves from the FIBA World Cup of 2 years ago or last year, whenever it was delayed because of COVID, building this outstanding roster ready to take the world by storm. And then in their warm-up games, in their exhibition matches across the globe, they kind of let down across the board. I mean, maybe the Serbia game is the exception. They were up by 40 at half, won by 35. And then on the women's side, you've got this Team USA coming off of their loss to the WNBA All-Stars in a game where they were frankly dominated, and a bunch of players showed that they probably deserve to be on Team USA. Arike Ogunbowale, I'm looking right at you. This is very tough, because now if the women lose a game, and I mean not in the knockout stages, if they lose a group stage game, not that they will, but if they do, or if it's close at halftime, all you are going to hear about this team is, oh, they should have had Caitlin. Oh, they should have had Angel Reese. Oh, they should have had Arike Ogunbowale. But if the men's team on the other side lose or are tied at halftime, all you're going to hear is, oh, this team's such a letdown, and oh, they really haven't progressed since the FIBA World Cup, and things like Jason says, oh, the whole rest of the world is caught up to us in terms of developing basketball. I don't know that there is a solid answer, because I don't know that I have a solid answer. I think that there is a question that I've developed off of this, Jason, and that is, has there ever, when you take into account both of these teams, has there ever been more pressure on a four-time defending gold medalist?
It's a good question.
It's like Phelps era stuff.
USA men, by the way, are minus 400 to win gold. The women, did you see?
Minus 1800.
No. Yeah. USA women. It's minus 3,500 to win gold.
Oh, wow, it moved.
Minus 3,500 to win gold. The next closest, you want to talk about value? The next closest is France at plus 2,900. By the way, I have no idea who's on Team France. And we're not about to handicap this. But, I mean, to me, I think the answer is actually the women's team. Because I think the gap in the women's game internationally is still much larger than it is on the men's side, where obviously that gap has shrunk with the NBA and pro basketball being so global, which actually is kind of an interesting thing. And just to dovetail off that real quick, we poo-poo these leagues around the world. You know, a lot of times guys don't make it in the NBA. They go play overseas. And then you watch a team like Germany with a bunch of names you've never heard of, or a Serbia and a bunch of names you've never heard of, or you know, any of these teams, South Sudan, a bunch of names you've never heard of. And you watch the talent, and it just goes to show you that, you know, the NBA has, you know, 30 teams or whatever it is. And you can make the argument for expansion in the NBA when you see how much talent there is around the world, that there's enough guys from around the world that you've never heard of, that you've never watched, that you'll never watch, that you'll never see, you'll never hear about, that are probably capable of playing in the NBA, especially the NBA as it is today, where defense is less prevalent, where scoring is more the thing, more of these hybrid offenses. I think you can make the argument that watching the game internationally lends itself to the idea that the NBA could expand if it wanted to.
Well, you're right. I also think it's a different game internationally, right? And we're seeing that with this U-Team USA, these foreign teams, and in European basketball, these players that come over, they play the physical game, they play the defensive game, and that's why the U.S. will struggle. Real quick, minus 350 if you parlay them both to win gold.
It's not a bad idea. Odds and ends. Yeah, odds and ends next. All right, just about time to wrap this baby up for a Wednesday. More NFL training camp coverage and NFL preseason talk on tomorrow's show. Getting to some baseball as well. Sammy Arnell, time for some odds and ends. Odds and ends, Sammy Arnell. I said I wasn't going to mention Charlie Woods anymore. I lied. Charlie Woods misses the cut for the Junior Am, the USGA Junior Amateur. He finishes 22 over near the very bottom of the competitors at Oakland Hills. So just wanted to make sure we closed the loop on the Charlie Woods experience. His first time obviously playing at that level. He'll obviously grow from it. We wish him the best of luck. Odds and ends, speaking of golf. Now, this may shock a lot of people that I gave eyeballs to this, but I did. I watched yesterday Bryson DeChambeau's Break 50 Challenge, which, by the way, the challenge and the offer to Bryson still stands. Bryson, I'd love to do the Break 50 with you. I know you're trying to save this for big names and giant stars, and I'm just a C-lister, and I get it. That's fine. But I think we could raise money for the Trevor Project, which helps at-risk LGBTQ plus youth, suicide prevention. It is a very worthy cause. Hopefully, Bryson DeChambeau. This is 48 hours since I laid down the offer. I am offering it again. I watched Bryson DeChambeau and Donald Trump. I watched about 5 or 6 holes. I didn't get to get through the whole thing. It's like 51 minutes, and I don't have 51 minutes during my day to watch Donald Trump do anything. But I will say this. Donald Trump, who is pushing 80, is a hell of a golfer. I know Rick Riley will get mad at me and say, but he cheats and he kicks balls into the fairway and blah, blah, blah. I get all that. But if you watch the guy, he obviously is really good at golf. He may not be good at much of anything else. Sorry, not sorry. But Donald Trump can play golf. Bryson DeChambeau is pretty good at it, too. But the Break 50 Challenge thing is a pretty cool concept. From the red tees, both guys, basically a scramble format. You know, they both get to play their own balls in from the spot where the drive lands. And I was actually pretty impressed with what I saw out of Donald Trump on the golf course yesterday. Not to say anything about his politics, which if all you have to do is go on my X at the back page and you'll see how I feel about that. But the guy can actually play golf. There it is.
When at any level of golf, if you can ever put your golf ball closer to the hole than the pros while playing from the same distance,
yeah,
it's objectively impressive. He did that yesterday.
He did.
Kudos.
Can't putt. Can't putt to save his life, though. I mean, man, it's schlocking. It's that scene in Spaceballs, man, where he goes, hey, schlocking, go back to the golf course and work on your putts. I mean, man, that's Donald Trump's got this jab putt that is just not good, which is kind of amazing for me. And I'll tell you why. It is odds and ends, after all. I'll tell you why. I've played golf with a lot of seniors who have taken my money on golf courses, okay? Because I'll play the front nine and I'm out driving them by 50 or 60 yards and I'm like, hey, want to play for some money? And then they hustle me because they can chip and they can putt. Because those are two things that there is no need to be super strong or super physical. They're touch. It's form. And for a guy like Donald Trump at his age, to be able to do the other things like drive the golf ball, hit irons, things like that, it kind of surprises me that he is not a better putter. Because that's just an attention to detail thing. But then again, it's Donald Trump, attention to detail, blah, blah, blah. But that was kind of interesting to me. That his short game of all the things is kind of the thing that struggles, was kind of odd to me. I don't know.
I'd fade him.
You'd fade him? You're not taking
I'd bet the over on his total round score. If they hung props.
Okay. I'd be fading Kristen Yelich right now. Scheduled to see a specialist, placed on the 10-day IL Wednesday with lower back inflammation. Not good news for the Brewers.
No, and it's tough for Kristen Yelich because he really turned, well, he didn't turn the season around. He was doing really well this season.
He was.
Performing at a very high level for a team that, out of nowhere, was winning this NL Central kind of hands down. Obviously, it's the 10-day, not the 15-day. Not that that means a whole lot, but it makes a little bit of a difference. He'll be down for a while. You hope that he's back by, like, mid to late August, but we'll see.
My Yankees lose to the Mets last night, and the Yankees put out one of their worst lineups of the season. Jose Canseco said it was one of the worst lineups he had ever seen in his entire life. I said, Jose Canseco, have you seen some of the lineups around Major League Baseball today? Let's pump the brakes on that a little bit. Maybe a little too
much. Some of the lineups he was a part of?
Exactly. But the Yankees lose to the Mets. The Mets, for just the fifth time in the history of interleague play and the Subway Series, will actually win the season series from the Yankees. Just the fifth time in 27 years that the Mets will win the season series. Buying or selling on the Mets there, Sam?
Selling. I've never been in on the Mets, but I'm starting to sell on the Yankees too. It might be what Jason said. He might have been right. They had a lead in this game and they blew it. And who blew it open? Jeff McNeil, huh?
Sam had money on him to hit a home run. Congrats, Sam. It's going to do it for us. Thank you to you, Sam. We'll see you all back here on Thursday for more Sports Wrap. Bye!